The date today is September 30th. The interview is taking place at Mr. Jorgensen's home in Bellingham and is being conducted by Cindy Klein. What is your full name, please?
Jorgen Jorgensen. My full name when I left Norway was Jorgen Odnerum, but I changed it after I came over here.
Jorgensen is your father's name?
That's my grandfather's name.
Your grandfather's name. All right. When and where were you born?
Norway.
Your city?
No, that was a little valley, farming country.
Okay, Mr. Jorgensen, where was your actual place of birth in Norway?
Sirdalen.
All right. And what was your date of birth?
February 17, 1909.
All right. What were your parents' names?
My father's name was Tarjei Odnerum. My mother's maiden name was Ingeborg Kveven.
What can you tell me about your parents? What were their occupations?
My father was farmer, small farm. Mm-hmm. And my mother was a housewife.
Uh-huh. What was your home like? Is this the same place that I see on the picture here? Or is this where you immigrated from?
This is the place where I immigrated from. I was born in my mother's home, Kveven. Mm-hmm. And we bought this place when I was about 4 or 5 years old.
Oh, so you lived in Sirdalen only until you were 4 or 5?
No, I lived in Sirdal till I was 20, till I left for USA.
Okay. Let's see, do you have brothers or sisters?
I had 6 sisters, no brothers.
Oh my goodness.
And I was the oldest one in the family.
You were. Okay. Do you remember your grandparents?
Oh yes, very well.
Oh, could you tell me something about your grandparents?
Well, both my grandparents had a small farm, and Sirdalen is about 5 Norwegian miles long, and my father's home was it was to the top of the Sirdal, 5 miles from the bottom, and my mother's family was about 4 Norwegian miles, and they were both farmers, but at that time where my dad was born, there was no road. You had to go on foot, or else you could have a boat. But of course, there was no power. You had to have your own boat. So it was in the winter time. They had to carry the grocery and everything over the mountain. So it was kind of a tough life. Uh-huh. But people that never been any other place, they didn't mind it. Uh-huh. Liked it.
Now, this you're talking about boat. Is this a lake?
This is more like a lake. That's farther down. That's like a river because it gets pretty strong streams.
Your grandparents were farmers then, and what kind of things did they raise?
Well, they raised beef and butter. Uh-huh. And in the winter time, up in the mountain, there was lots of ptarmigans, and he was had some ptarmigans. And that's what I did too when I was there. In 1929, I was up in my father's home, and I and his brother and his son, they had a cabin way in the mountain, And we went in there on Monday morning and stayed there for 6 days. On Saturday night, we went home with our cats. And there was one weekend, my uncle, he had 80 ptarmigan on his back. I had 50, and my cousin had 30. So we done fairly well that week. But things was cheap then, and we didn't get very much for them. But
So you sold them?
We sold them, yeah. Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so you spent a lot of time with your grandparents then? Or?
Yes, we spent time with my grandparents because we had a bicycle, and that didn't take me too long to go up and visit them.
Well, so, what were your sisters doing all this time?
Well, when I left Norway, I was 20, and my youngest sister was about 11. So there was my sister was all. My mother died when I was 11 years old. And my father, my younger sister then was just a little over a year, and my father raised us all. And he told my sister once, he says, "I'm not going to get married, I'm going to take care of your children." And that's what he did. And everybody loved him. And so he had a pretty happy after he got old. He had everybody around him, and of course I was the only one that was far away, but I visit Norway. I've been back there 6 times.
Ooh.
The first time I went back to Norway was in 1947, right after the war, and I hadn't heard from my folks or any relatives since the war broke out in 1939.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know how many was alive, and I didn't know what had happened to me. So when the first letter we got was through Red Cross, and found out that everybody was alive, and they also found out that I was married and had a wife and a boy, and we all were fine.
Now you said your father was a farmer also. Mm-hmm. What kind of things did he raise?
Well, he raised beef and grain, potatoes.
Uh-huh. And all the children too.
Yes.
Okay. I should have you tell me the names of your sisters also.
My older sister, her name was Clara. Next one was Guri, then Siri.
I should have you spell these names for me.
Okay. Clara, K-L-A-R-A.
Uh-huh.
Guri, G-U-R-I.
Okay.
Sigri, S-I-G. R-I-D.
Okay.
Tony, T-O-N-N-Y. Tobine, T-O-B-I-N-E. Olga, O-L-G-A. She was the youngest one, and she was just a little over a year when my mother died in 1920.
Can you describe your childhood home?
My childhood home was happy, because we missed our mother, but we had a very good father, and so we were a happy, close family, and we always been that way.
So you still correspond, are back and forth with your family?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I took I sent a ticket to my father and took him over here in 1956. The first invitation I sent him, if he wanted to come over and visit. And he said no, he didn't want to go on an aeroplane. And after, in 56, my aunt took a trip to Norway. And when he heard that she was coming and was going to visit and go back, so he would have company with her, he wrote and asked if that invitation was still good to send him a ticket, and I said it was. And so he came over in 1956 in November, and he stayed till in March in 1957 when he went home. He liked it, and there was a lot of people that he knew that was over in this country, and also some of his cousins, but he would have never liked to stay.
Mm-hmm.
No, he had he'd been here 2-3 months, he wanted to get back home.
Uh-huh.
And then my two of my sisters, Olga, my younger sister, she lost her husband in 1976, and I had asked my older sister if she wanted to come over a trip and visit, I would send her a ticket, but she didn't want to travel alone. So after my younger sister lost her husband from a heart attack, she found him dead on the floor one day she came home from work. Well, then this was kind of hard on her, and I figured that she needed a vacation, and I thought that would do her good to come over here for a while. And so I wrote to her, and I said to talk to my older sister and see if they wouldn't both come, and I'd send him a ticket, a round-trip ticket. And they decided it would come for, so they came over here for 21 days. And we took them over Eastern Mountain, seeing all the fruit. There was just peaches and apple trees and everything. And then we have a lot of friends in Tacoma and people that they knew from Norway, and we visit them there. And,
uh-huh.
and so they really enjoyed the trip, and we were happy to have it, because whenever we came to Norway, we never stayed in a hotel or motel, because they were right there to get us, and we had a wonderful time every time. The first time when we come to Norway, it was not as good. It was right after the war,
mm-hmm.
and when we got into us, we wanted to stay in Sweden for 3 days. We went home on the Gripsholm, which has been used for, there was a Swedish boat being used for troop ship. And that's the only place we could get right after the war. All the Norwegians' liners was all filled up for many months ahead. But they hadn't converted over again after being for troop ships, so the women had to be in one place and the men in another. So I had, we were out in the Atlantic, and my boy was about 3 years old, 3.5 years old, and we were going up on the steps. My wife, she was in bed because it was kind of rough. Well, I was used to the water, and so I was going up the steps, and I got up on the second or third floor, and the boat started leaning over quite a bit, and there was one lady ahead of us. Well, she went right against the wall, so I don't know what happened, but there was things that start moving around. Well, I had my bond boy Terry on my arms, and I just waited till I saw the chance that the boat was coming back, and I got hold of a railing and got down underneath the stairway so nothing could hit me. But my folks was kind of worrying about it, because they came over the radio and also in the paper about this tidal wave the Gripsholm had. And so when we, there was those that were sitting in those big social rooms, well, the chairs and everything went from one place to another. So there was a lot of them that got hurt, but not bad. But there was a couple that he carried off the boat when we got into Sweden on the stretcher. But we had to wait for a while that night before supper, because they were just preparing supper and the dishes and everything was broken up that was on the table. So it was quite an experience.
Well, then how did you get from Sweden to Norway?
Well, we didn't make reservation for a hotel in Sweden before we left. So we figured it would be easy to find a hotel. When we got into Sweden, which was the 29th of March, 1947, we got in there about 9 o'clock in the evening, and they had to have an icebreaker out to break the ice for us to get into the dock. Well, so it was kind of cold. Well, we got off the boat, and I just went up to the telephone booth and tried to call different motels, and I figured we'd take a taxi and get to a motel. So my wife with a 3.5-year-old boy, she was sitting there on a bench. There was a roof over the waiting place, but there was no wall, so it was cold. And I tried every hotel, everything filled up. So I went back there, and here the captain from the boat was standing there talking to my wife, because she had all the clothes she could have around him so he wouldn't freeze. And I told him that we couldn't get no hotel room. And so the captain said, why don't you folks go back on the boat and stay there overnight? And I said, I've already made a reservation to take the train to Norway about 2:30 night. So we had a few hours to wait. Well, we got on the train. We got into the border between Norway and Sweden. Well, we had to stay there because they had to go through, the duty inspector had to go through everything. After we got into Norway, we had a hard time to find a motel there too. We finally ended up, somebody checked out all the Seaman's Mission motel, and we got a motel there, so we got the motel about 11 o'clock that day. And so I hadn't slept, and I was really tired. I just lay down on top of the bed and went right to sleep for a couple hours. Well, after we went out to eat, things was rationed. There was only milk for children. Grown up could have coffee or tea, no milk. And you got into the stores in Norway, there was hardly anything to buy. But we were left Norway again but the 1st of September, and then there was pretty well stacked up there, but of course things was rationed. Sugar and coffee and things like that was rationed, but you got food, flour and everything then in from United States, and things started pretty good. But as far as people from my hometown up in Seerdal, they didn't suffer anything, because they had the farm and they had their meat. But the people in the big city like Oslo, or I had an aunt and uncle outside Oslo, a little town of Moss. Well, they had 5 children, and everything was rationed, so they had a padlock on the bread drawer, and when it comes to eat, they had to just cut a couple of slices and divide it up just so each child got some. But they themselves were starving, so after the war that he had to take medicine for his stomach, because he just ruined his stomach. But outside of that, there was the only one of my relatives that was lost in the war was one of my cousins, and he was killed in the army, but otherwise they came out pretty good, because Seerdalen They didn't have no. Well, my dad was in jail for about a day or so because he was taking up collection for the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And the Germans, they didn't allow that.
Mm-hmm.
But when I left Norway when I left Sirdal on the 5th of March, and of course I could have went on a train to Stavanger, but anyway I chose to save some money, so I walked. I walked from my hometown and went over the mountain to another place, what they call Hunnedalen. And I had one of my father's youngest brother, he had a little farm there. And we had skis, so we made a pretty good time. So we walked over there, got there that evening. We come to a little place, what they call Österby. We stopped there for, got something to eat, coffee. My dad knew the people there and they were very nice. Then we got down to my father's brother, and we stayed there overnight. Well, then the road started to get bare, so we couldn't use our skis anymore, so we left the skis there. And then we walked, the next day, we walked to Røyneberg, which is a Norwegian mile from Stavanger. We got there way after dark, and we didn't have no, we'd never cut no ride for anybody. Well, there was nobody traveling at that time. So now after I've been home, I've been telling people how when I went to United States, I walked from my hometown. Well, nobody hardly believed it. But it took us 2 days. But my father was with, and then one of the neighbor. So we can't start carrying my suitcase. Of course, that was very light. I didn't have too many clothes with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, you, what you just described to me is when you were 20 years old and when you were leaving mm-hmm. Sirdalen to come to the United States. Is that correct?
Yes.
I just want to make certain
that's
about
right.
That. Okay, now, before that, you lived where until you were 11 years old? Was it 11 years old, you said?
No, I lived there until I was 20 years old.
Okay. All right. And just, I'm wondering, why did you decide to come to the United States?
Well, things was pretty hard in Norway at that time. And we were a big family, and so my father, he was talking about, he decided he wanted to go to Canada. And he figured we were growing up then, or big enough so we could take care of ourselves. Well, I said, no, Father, you stay home. I'm going to go, and I'm going to go to the United States. So I had an uncle in Tacoma, and he got papers filled out like a guarantee. So that made it much faster for me. Otherwise, you had to wait for the quota, and would took a long time at that time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I started. My plans was when I left, well, I just go over here and make some money. In 5 years, I come back.
Uh-huh.
And take over my father's farm, which he wanted me to. And after I came over here, I decided that Sirdalen was no place for me. Was saying in Norway, you know, after the Hoover got elected in 1928 as president, Hoddy said things was going to be really good, United States. Well, I came over We left Norway, but we left Norway the 9th of March, across North Sea, on a smaller boat, and then we stayed in London for 3 days to catch the boat from Southampton to Halifax. So we got to Halifax, but Southampton we left about the 14th. We got to Halifax about the 21st. We had a rough crossing then too. And then we took the train from Halifax to Vancouver. And I was traveling with a friend of mine, Anton Austal, and he had 3 brothers in Bellingham. So I decided instead of going to Tacoma, I could get off in Bellingham with him, because, or take him up and meet us in Vancouver. So Bellingham was my first place. We stayed at the I stayed at the Commercial Hotel in Bellingham that first night. And of course, we met lots of friends. He had his 3 brothers there, and I had relatives too. So we had the hotel room full of people come to visit us that first night.
So you weren't really by yourself at all. You had traveled with friends.
And I had this friend, Anton Austal, I traveled with.
Uh-huh.
And he got pretty sick going across the Atlantic. Mm-hmm. North Sea, we had fine weather. So I carried food to him 2-3 days. You know, he never got out of bed. But there was a bad ending for him. He only was here from 1939, 1931. He got killed in an automobile accident, and I was in the car, but not. We'd been to Seattle trying to get a job to go to Alaska fishing, and we came back from Seattle and we stopped. We drove around by Cedar Woolley, stopped out at Saxon. Well, he wanted me to go with him into Bellingham, his brother and Anton. Well, then he wanted me to stay out there, so I got off out there. So I happened to get away from that accident. On the way in, he had that accident, and he got killed instantly.
Now, when did you actually come to the United States then? What year was it?
I actually come to United States on, I believe it was the 28th of March,
1929. Okay. Okay, what was your, so you arrived in Vancouver then, before you started working here?
Well, we just, we arrived in Vancouver, and we only, Anton's brothers was there, two of them. As soon as we got off the train in Vancouver, they were there, because we couldn't speak English.
Mm-hmm.
So we got down to Bellingham, and some of my friends, they were working out at for Bloedel Donovan, 30 miles out of town. And they asked the superintendent for a job for me, but there was snow then, so the camp couldn't start up. But when they did start up, there was it was 250 men working there in the woods. And so I start working on April 18th on the foundation for 22 car garage, which was before you go up the hill down would take the speeder up to the woods. So I worked there, and at that time you didn't have no bulldozer. We were working with picking a shovel and wheelbarrow, and I was pretty young and after traveling, you know, but I really was scared for my job too, so I really worked hard. So when I got home in the evening, if I lay down on the floor, I couldn't hardly get up. I was so stiff and tired, and there was two other guys that was working there. They came out from Minneapolis. And they told me, if you keep on working like that, you're going to kill yourself. Well, there was only about 3-4 days. Both those two got fired because they wasn't doing enough work, and I stayed. So I worked steady there up till 1930, the 4th of July, when the camp shut down, which it did all over Washington. Everything come to a standstill. So that's when we had the hard times for a few years, but I managed. I've never got any relief or anything for, I've always worked and made my living. And sometimes you took jobs where you didn't make much money. I worked on a farm once down by Mount Vernon, that was in 1932, for $1 a day. And when I started working here, coming over here, the wages was, we got $4.50 a day. When the camp started up again in 1931, they had cut the wages, so we got $1.98 a day, and but $1 that was board and room, so we had left less than $1. But then in 1932, things were still tough when I decided going to Alaska, to Nome, Alaska. Well, I got a job, but there was the only one who promised me a job for 15 days. But I says, okay, I says, I'll take it. And he says, if you do the work, he says, you might stay all summer. He's going to pay us $5 a day in board and room. But of course, we didn't realize that there was an 8-hour day up there. There was no such a thing as me more 10-hour day. We thought. Mm-hmm. But that was hard work, working in a plaster gold mine.
What was that? Where was this in Alaska?
It was in Nome, Alaska. Nome? Well, they're 60 miles west of Nome, a place what they call Bluff.
Uh-huh. And, plaster gold mine.
Plaster gold mine.
Uh-huh. Now, what kind of things were you doing there?
Well,
it sounds like heavy work.
Well, what they did was, the reason he promised me job for 15 days was because he said he could always use an extra man for B&D, got things ready. Mm-hmm. Started up. And so after we started up, he would be one man short, one man too many. But anyway, I was young and I worked hard, and he saw that, so he put me on the night shift and put me on the most dangerous and hardest job there was. And here I was, just 21 years old. And we had a slack skyline, and that line broke. We had to stay right under it. That line broke 3 times during the summer, and each time they went over our head, so they didn't hit us. And one time I took the hat off my partner. So I decided, even if 10 years work in the woods, I would rather work in the woods and work on a condition like that. So I didn't go back in 1933.
Did you come back down here then?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. I come back down here, and when things open up, so I could be back in the woods.
Uh-huh. Was that with Bloedel Donovan then?
That was with Bloedel Donovan. Uh-huh.
They were the large logging company at the time.
Yes, they were. Uh-huh. They had mills over here at Lake Whatcom and Bellingham, and they was a large company. And so I worked off and on in the camp logging up to 1941, but I went fishing up to Alaska in 1934, 35, and 36, 37. I went out on the boats on shares. 1939, I went up to King Cove, or close to Bering Sea, 39, 40, and 41. Well, in 1941, before the war broke out, Morrison Knudsen took some big contracts up in Alaska. And we were, one of them was at Cold Bay, which is only about an hour's run with a boat from King Cove. So they wanted to try to hire people from the cannery there in the fall when the fishing season was over to go over and start working at Cold Bay, putting up a camp, because they had to go forth and back to Cold Bay till they got a camp up. And we're going to build a big runway, which is a... Well, they, when the boat was going to leave, everybody left except 3 of us. Went over there. Well, I was going to go over there as a carpenter, but I didn't have no carpenter tools. I had to send for carpenter tools, so I worked in a cookhouse for about a month before I got carpenter tools, because the mailboat only came in every 2 weeks. So I worked there at Cold Bay for Morrison and Knudsen. And then when the war broke out, I was there when the war broke out, well, then the army was going to take over. And so I asked for to be transferred to Cordova, because I knew they had a big job in Cordova. Well, they wanted me to stay, but when I insisted, he says, okay, he says, we'll give you a trip to Anchorage, we'll pay your expenses, and give you a vacation, and if we'd like to have you go back to Cold Bay, but if you refuse, we'll send you to Cordova. So we left, the superintendent came down, there was just one of those small brush pilots, four or five men to the plane, came down and he says, well, well, you can go with us to Anchorage. Well, we went, we were the pilot and me and the general superintendent for Morrison Knudsen and the superintendent for big construction company of Iowa, which had subcontract on putting up the building for the radio station. We started out on February 21st, and we got a little ways and the weather got so bad and the downdraft, so we turned back. And so we started out again on January 22nd, and we got quite a ways, and it was fog and rain. So we sat down on the sandy beach along the river, which the pilot said was pretty good, so you could land. We sat there for a couple hours in the plane till the fog lifted a little bit and we took off, and we got to Naknek. We stopped and gassed up and then started out for Anchorage. Well, we got up to the mountain, to the pass. They got so bad we couldn't make it, so we turned around and we landed on Elanana Lake, cut hole in the ice and tied a plane down, took a little stick under the ice in its wing and cut and tied a plane down. Then we walked 3 miles to a roadhouse, and we got the weather report there every day, and we stayed there for 3 days. Then we finally got the weather report. There was pretty good weather coming up and good weather in Anchorage. So we started out early and built fire under the plane to warm up the oil and everything. And then we took off. We got up in the pass, and it got so foggy that you couldn't... you couldn't turn round. We just got fogged in. Well, the pilot, he just kept on circle round inside till we got up to 12,000 feet. And he says, the highest mountain is here is about 9,000 feet, so he says, we are safe. And he just flied and by the compass. We got over Cook's Inlet. We could see the water, and he just dove down under it. We got into Anchorage. The sun was shining. But it took me 11 days to get from Cold Bay to Cordova. After we got into Anchorage, then we had to wait there till the weather got good so you could fly till to Cordova. So I worked on Morrison Knudsen during the war for 2 years. So they had 16 on their own planes, and sometimes they had a charter plane because they had so many men working, and they had their headquarters in Anchorage. They rented the whole floor in one of the hotels, so they had place for the working people coming in and out. So I got to see a lot of Alaska, and it was a good company to work for.
Now, you were doing carpentry work at
this
time?
I was doing carpenter work.
Now, all this time you were working in Alaska, were you primarily with other people who were of Norwegian descent?
No.
Okay, how did you learn English?
Oh, well, I picked that up pretty fast because, you know, when I started working up in the logging camp, there were some Norwegians and Swedes, you know. But I worked with people who there wasn't around, and I know they sent me after some stuff down to the warehouse. I didn't know what to take, and I know I come back with the wrong thing. The guy just shook his head. Went back, I didn't understand, but they didn't take long to. They didn't take long before you pick it up.
I want to know how you met your wife.
Well, it's after I came down from Alaska in 1943, and I had my dad's, it would be my second cousin, and his wife lived in Bellingham. She called me up one night. I was staying at the hotel, and she says, "You want to come up out tomorrow night for dinner?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to Seattle tomorrow, but I said I'll be back the next day." "Well, will you come when you come back from Seattle the next day?" And I said, "Yes." Well, she says, "Can I depend on it?" I said, "Yeah, you can depend on it." So she had invited Florence, and so I got out there. She says, "I got a nice girl for you that I want you to meet." And she says, "You haven't shaved today, have you?" "Well, no," I said, "I just came from..." "Well," she says, "come into the bathroom and shave. I want you to meet this nice girl." So I did. So that was how we met.
That was how you met. And then when were you married after that?
In 14 days.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. 14 days. Now you have one son also? And what is his name?
His name is Terry Jorgensen.
Okay. And when was he born?
He was born in January
29. Oh, that's my birthday too.
not January 29. He was born November 3rd. 1943.
Okay. And where, were you in Bellingham, living in Bellingham then at the time?
Yes, we're living in Bellingham. You see, when I came down from Alaska at that time, you see, I'd been working for Morrison Knudsen on defense jobs. And when I came down to Alaska, I had to report to the draft board. And the draft board went in there in the evening, and the draft board says that they didn't like to see anybody go back up to Alaska, take a lot of money, and some people go in army. So I said, "Well, I'm not afraid of the army." I was single then. And so he says, "Okay, we'll give your decision, we'll make the decision, and you'll know tomorrow." Well, that day I got a card from the draft board. He said, "Deferment denied." So Morrison Knudsen called me up, and he says, "We want you back to Alaska, and we're going to take it up with the Board of Appeal." So they filed with the Board of Appeal, and he says, "You be ready So we can get hold of you within 12 to 24 hours. That don't go any place, because whenever we can get a deferment, you come back up. Well, I knew I would either have be going, figured I would be going in army, and so I thought I didn't have much time, and I figured, well, if I go, if I do come back, I said, she probably is not going to be waiting for me. So we got married.
Uh-huh.
And then when we got married, we couldn't decide on renting an apartment, because we were just waiting for, well, I could have either going army or else going back to Alaska. And it took quite a while, but the 5th of March, they called me from Seattle and he says, we got another deferment for you and you're going to Alaska as soon as you can get a transportation for you. Well, there wasn't too many airplane available then, and he figured I'd have to go by boat. So I didn't get a reservation to leave Seattle before the 21st of March.
Mm-hmm.
So that took a long time from the 29th, from January to March.
Uh-huh.
Before we got.
I think we're going to pause here just a moment, and I'm going to switch the tape. Right after, let's see, when you were working for Morrison Knudsen then during the war, and you, this was just after you were married and you got your deferment to go up to Alaska and work.
Mm-hmm.
How long was it before you got to come back?
I was there for 6 months.
6 months.
And then I got my induction paper for the Army, and they want me to take the examination up in Anchorage. They says, oh, they'll never take you now, being the war is just about over. And I said, no, I said, I'm going to go back, because I wasn't so sure. So I came and I said, I want to go home and see my wife. And so I went down, and of course I was sent in for induction on October. And when I got down there, they asked me what I preferred, Army, Navy, or Coast Guard, or Marines. I said Army. So I went through the doctors. When I come to the doctor said, I got hurt in 1933, my right eye. I ran into a barbed wire fence, so I had a cataract on my eye. That's the reason he waited so long before they called me, because my draft board, I was on the lottery before the war broke out. My number was 324, so I would have been one of the first one taken. But he said, you'll never be taken unless we get into war, and then maybe not then. So the doctor then says, well, he says, if we were going to take you in the army, we would have to give you an operation on your eye, and we got the hospital full of men coming back from overseas. So he says, you just go back and work or do whatever you want. You put me in 4F.
Uh-huh.
So.
So, and then, now this was the year your son was born also?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. After, were you still working with Morrison Knudsen then?
No, that was then.
Uh-huh.
I didn't go back then for Morrison Knudsen. I started working in the shipyard here in Bellingham. And worked there for a while, and then I had bought a farm out in Clipper.
Uh-huh.
And we went back out on the farm and was there till 1946. my wife, she had asthma and she couldn't stand the farm, the dust, mm-hmm. and so we figured I'd best to sell the farm and move to town, and I built the house here in 1946.
This
and
we've
been, yeah, uh-huh. been here ever since.
Uh-huh. So after farming, what did you do? Did you just take different jobs or?
Oh, I done carpenter work.
Carpentry. Uh-huh.
Sometime I worked for myself, contract for myself, uh-huh. and most of the time I worked for companies. I worked for one company from Seattle for 7 years up at the university before I retired. Mm-hmm. I was always working except during the Depression, but otherwise I never had no trouble of finding jobs if I didn't have if I couldn't find any work, well, I always took something for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I either built a house or built. So.
Uh-huh. Well, let me ask you about your current activities. Are you involved in a Scandinavian organization here or any church organization?
Oh, yes, we are involved in church organization.
Uh-huh.
We are Lutheran and we belong to St. John's Lutheran here in Bellingham.
Uh-huh. And what about a Scandinavian organization? Are you Sons of Norway here, or?
Well, no, we don't belong to Sons and Daughters of Norway.
Uh-huh.
But we go to their, especially to their Lutefisk dinner and
uh-huh.
And the 17th of May doing stuff like that. But
uh-huh. Well, does your son, have you? Does your son know the language?
Yes, well, when we went back to Norway, things were so hard to travel, and we want to go to see my wife's folks. And things were tough then, so we left him with my dad and my sister, and we were gone 3 weeks. When we come back, he was talking Norwegian.
Uh-huh.
And after we came back here, he forgot it because we didn't keep it up.
Mm-hmm.
And when my dad came over in 56, he said, well, it's too bad. He says that he knew the Norwegian language so good when he was 3.5 years old and that you folks couldn't keep it up, so he knew it. Well, when he went to college, he went down to the U, and he had to take a foreign language, so he took Norwegian. And that brought it back. So when him and his wife took a trip to Norway, in 1968, and he got along pretty good, you know. And then we all took a trip in 1979, and my wife and Terry and his wife and the two children.
Uh-huh.
And he got along real good in Norwegian, because the rest of them didn't know any Norwegian.
Uh-huh. His wife doesn't know Norwegian?
No.
Or?
No.
You have two grandchildren then?
Yes.
Uh-huh. What are their ages?
The girl is Melissa, she is 11, and the boy is 5. The boy is 6.
Uh-huh. What's his name?
His name is Michael.
Uh-huh. Is your wife Norwegian also?
Yeah, she's Norwegian, so she could speak Norwegian because her folks spoke Norwegian when she was kid, but she's born in Bellingham, but her mother was born in Norway.
Uh-huh.
Her dad was born in North Dakota, but mm-hmm. among Norwegians and Swedes, so he could speak Norwegian real good.
Do you have any customs that you remember from your childhood? How did you celebrate Christmas?
Well, we celebrate Christmas. We didn't get many presents.
Uh-huh.
No, the people couldn't afford it. But we had a very nice Christmas. We always had nice Christmas. My dad, he got up in the morning and he was good he could cook, and he made cookies and everything until my sister got so that she could do it. But we always had a Christmas tree. We always, my dad always, before we had our Christmas dinner, or there would be Christmas Eve dinner, he always sat down and had a devotion. He had a big, it wasn't a Bible, but there was this big devotional book. And it took probably over an hour to read it.
Mm-hmm.
So we all sitting round the table and listened to my dad read the Christmas story. And then we opened our presents and went round the Christmas tree. So just the family, my dad and...
Uh-huh.
Us seven, and then later on, then there was always to have a Christmas pudding. We made it out of rice. We had that about 11 o'clock. And then maybe my father went to bed, the rest of it, that was Christmas Eve. We could stay up as long as we want to.
Uh-huh.
So I got nothing but good memory from my childhood and
mm-hmm.
growing up, and we had a wonderful father and all my sister now. There's only one of my sister that's gone. She died in 79. She had everything planned for us, and in about February we were come home in July. She got sick and she got cancer
mm-hmm.
on the pancreas, and she went pretty fast. She died on April 20th, just the same day as my mother died. She died April 20th in 1920, and my sister died in 79, 59 years.
Mm-hmm.
But all the rest of them is alive.
Uh-huh. Do you have any... special memories from your childhood that you would like to share? You probably had quite a few, it sounds like.
Oh, yes. So we had,
you told me about hunting with your grandfather.
Yeah, well, there was really, we didn't hunt. We put up snares to catch the ptarmigan.
Uh-huh.
No, he didn't want to allow us to have, well, we had a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And I shot a ptarmigan one day, but he didn't like it. Because he said, they chase him away.
Uh-huh.
If the ptarmigan would be there, if they got scared, he would just go fly for rice. Well, maybe the few hours, they would come back to the same place. So we caught him in snares, put them in the snow, and we put something there in front that they would eat. Then he would walk through and had some that.
What is the name of this, the picture I'm looking at? Your home there?
That's Lunne and Shaye. It's all in one, but it's two different names. Where my home is Shaye. That's the, when you come, gone up Seerdal, that's the first house gone on your right.
Okay, how do you spell that?
S-K-G-E-I-A. Show you.
Okay. Let's see. Was there anything you wanted to share in the way of a poem or a prayer or a song in Norwegian?
Well, I put in there for forgot most of the songs, you know. If I had a book, you know, then I
uh-huh.
could sing it. But on memory, you know,
uh-huh.
I forgot most of it.
Okay, well, I think...
But we, now even here, you know, we are a real close family now. My son, he was... the whole family, but he was always real good. We thanks a lot of the whole family, and they thank a lot of us.
And he's been over to Norway several times then.
Yeah, he's been over. I've been over there six times. My wife has been there four times, and he's been there three times. And his wife has been there two times. And his children have been there once. So now I hope that someday they will be going over, because they will remember very little of Norway from, you know, Michael was only 2 years old, 3 years old. And Melissa was about seven. So she'll remember some.
Right. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
No, I would say that I've been real fortunately, because we had a Christian home, and all my sister was Christian, and I have come over here and worked. I have had real good health, and always been pretty lucky. I have worked on a lot of places, dangerous work in the woods, but I've never been hurt. So we got lots to be together. I got a wonderful wife. And my son, he is a principal over at Columbia School here in town. So I must say I'm being very fortunately, and we got lots to be thankful for. We have our devotion, and we are every night, and so we really got a lot to thankful for. I'm now 73 years old, and I'm keeping busy every day.
What kind of things do you do?
Well, I got about 30 apartments to manage.
Oh my goodness.
So there's always something to do.
So you haven't really retired then, have you?
After I retired, I've been busier than ever, but I'm my own boss.
Right.
Because my son, well, I had to, I built some apartment, and then we bought some, and so my son, he's too busy with school, so he leave all of it up to me, except he does do the bookkeeping and some of it, but otherwise I'm the manager, and of course his father-in-law. We got a place there where we are, three of us, because there's 10 apartments, and he's in on that, but I'm the one to take care of it. Whenever I did something I need help for, I call on him if he's home, but he's retired, and he traveled quite a bit. And now Friday they're going to take a trip to China, him and his wife. That's a church organization that arranged this tour. But I feel I'm in real good health, and don't bother me.
Good.
Yeah. So.
Well, if that's all, I will thank you very much for the interview, and this concludes the interview with Mr. Jorgen Jorgensen.